From team headquarters, this is the 49ers Studios Podcast.
It's time for our first 49ers Studios Podcast of the new year, and we have a very special guest on the phone today. It's Andrew Hawkins, a six-year NFL vet, now with ESPN. You can find him on SportsCenter, and the co-host of the brand new Tomahawk Podcast with Joe Thomas. Andrew, appreciate your time, man. Thanks for joining me.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Andrew, we got to start with Kyle Shanahan, a guy you know very well. You spent 6 years in the NFL, three in Cleveland, three in Cincinnati. Your best season was in 2014, 63 catches, 824 yards, two touchdowns. I know there's a lot of factors that go into statistics and how you do in a given year, but what was it like, plain and simple, working with Kyle Shanahan? What were your impressions of him?
I think more than anything, he made it easy on the players. You know what I mean? As a player, you go through so much. There's so much you have to take into consideration when you're prepping for an opponent, whether that's in the play calls or how you're running your routes. And, you know, there's coaches that literally leave everything up to you, and some players like that freedom. And then there's coaches who kind of assess what your talents are, what you're gifted at, and then they put you in the position they feel is best for the team's success and your personal success. So I think that's what Cal does best is, like, when I was out on the field, it took all the thinking out for me. And for, you know, a lot of the things where I would usually be racking my brain or overthinking situations or coverages or leverage or, you know, how I wanted to run a route, like, it was all super simple. And everybody was on the same page. And that way everybody knew what to expect from the next guy. And I think that's what makes Cal's offenses click so much. And because he does an incredible job of getting everybody on the same page, from the coaches to the players to even the way plays are called, and you kind of start to expect it and you're starting to get into a rhythm. And I think that's why we've seen so much success in Cleveland when we started that year in 2014.
What you've seen from players here, really from the second Kyle got to San Francisco, from guys like Joe Staley, as old as they come, you know, on the veterans on the roster to the youngest guys on the roster, really, you know, they would marvel at the acumen, the football acumen of Kyle Shanahan. Was there ever a time in a meeting where you're in practice or whether you're watching him call plays during a game and you're just like, my goodness, this guy is just, he gets it on another level?
Yeah, no, he definitely does, man. I think what's most impressive is you don't normally find guys with that kind of football IQ that come from the receiver position. You know, so he played his football as a receiver, and usually people put that tag on guys who come, you know, from quarterback lineage or were quarterback or whatever that looks like. You know, so in the offense, it was unique for me as a receiver to have an offensive coordinator who honestly is a receiver first mindset because that's what he played. And not only that, the way he does it is, you know, like, he wants his offenses to be successful, obviously, right? But traditionally, you know, there's kind of a stereotype or a stigma around an offensive coordinator and the relationship with the players and how they play call and how they want their offense to be shaped, because the player wants success statistically because that's how he gets paid. And that's for most positions. And then there's the offensive coordinator who only cares about the offense doing well. Well, Kyle has a very unique perspective and way of doing it to where those two goals are the same thing, right? So it's easy to get buy-in from players because he crafts his offense around that goal. So it's not just about, you know, making sure the offense looks great, because that could be done. And also, you know, a guy like Andrew Hawkins could have his best statistical season, right? And a guy like, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo can be throwing the ball over the place, and the running back and Carlos Hyde can have a great year. And you know, he does an incredible job of crafting the offense that way to where everybody's goals are aligned. And when you have everyone's goals aligned, you get the kind of excitement that you've seen from the San Francisco 49ers down the stretch.
When you guys were together in Cleveland, did you look at him and say, this is a head coach in the making?
Yeah. I think you kind of know. You know, for the most part, at least me, like, I've been around guys, and there's guys now that are, you know, position-level coaches that I think will be head coaches one day. And Cal obviously fit that bill. I mean, he had such a command of the offense, and he understood it so intently, and you know, it was just impressive, to be honest. And I've been around offensive coordinators who didn't understand it that way, who I didn't have that feeling about. You know, and so, I mean, that was like an easy one. That was a layup. It wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when.
Yep. Do you have a favorite Kyle Shanahan story that you can share with us that maybe we don't know about, you know, his time in Cleveland and your guys' experience together, whether it's a one-on-one meeting you guys had in the meeting room, practice field, whatever it may be? I mean, whenever you – you know, see Kyle, if you ever see him around, what would be the first story you'd want to reminisce about?
That's a funny one. I don't know if any of the stories would be ones that he would want me to share on a podcast. But no, I mean, Cal has a lot of fun. I mean, me and Cal mess a lot because, you know, he's so focused on ball, man. You know, and it's like, you know, my thing when I'm judging coaches or I'm judging, you know, quarterbacks specifically, I want to make sure that you care more than anybody else, right? So when I'm looking at my quarterback and I'm watching him on the field and, you know, even if you can watch the game on the telecast, if you're watching and it seems like the quarterback, it should feel like he cares more about this win than anybody else on the field. Like he's going to do whatever it takes to win. And that's how I like my coaches as well. And that's the kind of guy, you know, Cal was. It was no nonsense. It was no, you know, he wasn't a drill sergeant, but you understood that his goal was success, period. Everything we did revolved around that, whether that was in his personal life, whether that was when he was in the meeting, whether we're having a conversation, we would be talking about our kids, and it would quickly just go back to football because we're trying to find first downs on Sunday. And, you know, if you're not a coach like that, then I probably don't respect you, to be honest, because I need you to care about it to that level because that's the kind of player I am. And so I think that's why me and Cal had such a great relationship and such a good run when we were together in Cleveland.
100%. What do you make of his first year in San Francisco? Obviously, he wasn't expecting or hoping for an 0-9 start. But what he was saying is, I'm going to make sure I'm better from it. You know, I feel like I'm battle tested and can get through anything, you know, from his days in Washington and Cleveland, and throughout his career, right? I mean, he's been in the league long enough to where he's taken his lumps. And he said, you know, I'm going to make sure that, you know, I didn't want this to happen, but now that it is happening, I'm going to make sure that myself and the rest of this team is better from it. What have you seen from him? Do you feel like he's grown at all? Do you feel like he's changed at all? Or is he same old Kyle?
Yeah, no, I think he's definitely grown. I mean, I know Kyle, I know he's competitive. So, you know, there's situations where coaches come in, they don't have a success, and they give you the excuse that, hey, you know, we're just starting out, we're building the foundation, and we knew it was going to be hard. And I know that's not how Kyle thinks. Kyle wants to win every time. If you're keeping score, he wants to win. You know, so I know the 0-9 start was hard on him. And I mean, you could even tell by the moves he made in the offseason that he was trying to craft the team and put him in position to get W's, right? You know, but that takes time. That takes. You know, he is in a new position. No matter how much experience he's had himself or through the eyes of his family or whatever that looks like, you know, it takes you figuring out your own formula. And I think that he's done that. And I feel like he's got the guy in Jimmy Garoppolo to take it to the next level.
Again, on the phone with Andrew Hawkins, 6-year NFL veteran now with ESPN. As a SportsCenter host, you can also catch him on the Tomahawk podcast with Joe Thomas. Follow him on Twitter at Hawk, which I got to say, the fact that you got at Hawk, that's pretty smooth right there. I wish I could have like at Joe, but that was one of the first ones gone. So you got a smooth Twitter handle, easy to remember. Andrew, we got to switch gears to Jimmy Garoppolo, and you mentioned him a little bit, but you had a tweet that really piqued my interest. I know you're good friends with Josh McCown, quarterback of the New York Jets, and both of you guys very intelligent football minds, widely respected football guys, you know, around the league, around the country. And he told you, if you take nothing else from what I say, quote me that he will be the next great quarterback in the NFL, something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing. What was that conversation like? I mean, how did that come up? What was he, you know, what was his impression of Jimmy Garoppolo? And you know, yeah, tell me that story.
Yeah, so Josh is a guy, and it kind of goes back to our previous conversation about, you know, if you know somebody's a head coach, Josh is a guy who's going to be a head coach in this league, and he's going to be a successful head coach. And when you're around him for a short period of time, you understand it. So basically, how it comes up is, you know, Josh knows that I have front office and GM aspirations as well. I know that he has aspirations as a coach. So we would talk ball. We would check guys around the league. We would give our opinions on certain things. And, you know, the state of Cleveland Browns is they can't find a stable quarterback and their quarterback of the future. So, you know, and this is while Josh is the quarterback. So imagine that. This is the guy quarterback, and he's telling people, yo, you need to go get this guy because he understands he's 38 years old. You know, he's not getting any younger. You know, he's not trying to be the future of a franchise. He understands how the game of football works. You know, but what he was doing was he was watching film on all the guys. He's watching the Kirk Cousins. He's watching the Jimmy Garoppolo. He's watching the young up-and-coming backup quarterbacks, the surging quarterbacks, whatever that looks like. And his take was that Jimmy Garoppolo was the real deal. So he broke down his two tapes, and he kind of went through like a checklist of why he thought that. And he was basically yelling it from the mountaintops to anybody that would listen. And it just goes to show how spot on he was. And you know, that's so to see the things that Jimmy has done this year in the last five games that he started in San Francisco, it just adds validity to my take that Josh is going to be an incredible coach one day as well.
So you've seen it. I mean, you obviously, that's a pretty big, it's a high bar to put on a guy. And so when you watch those five games that he played through the lens of what Josh provided you, were you impressed? Do you feel like that Jimmy Garoppolo fit that bill?
Yeah, I did. Now, so what happened last year, I retired from the Patriots in August. So I spent the offseason with the Patriots before I decided to hang them up before training camp. And, so Jimmy Garoppolo is the backup quarterback, obviously, to Tom Brady. And so one thing that I noticed while I was there, being in Cleveland and, you go through a lot of quarterbacks, right? Quarterbacks get injured, quarterbacks get signed, quarterbacks get, traded, drafted, whatever. So I have played with more quarterbacks than I ever have in my life in Cleveland and got to practice with them on a daily basis and see how they worked and see how they processed. So being there in the offseason with Jimmy Garoppolo, and there's Tom Brady. Tom Brady probably misses one throw every three practices, which is ridiculous, right? I've gone through practices in Cleveland where there's been guys who haven't hit a throw in three practices, let alone only miss one for a three practice period. And then there's Jimmy, and Jimmy misses a throw maybe every 2.5 practices, which is also crazy. Like, so I'm sitting there watching the kid, and obviously he is a backup to one of the greatest, if not the greatest, football player in the history of the game. But he studies so much, and he's talking ball constantly, and he's talking me through routes, and I'm trying to pick the offense up, and he just understands it so intently. And but also in the matter of, like, hey man, just play football. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're looking to do, but we're going to defer to what you do because this is what you do best. And I think that's how you know if a quarterback is very confident in his abilities, because there's guys who say, no, I need it my way. I need everything perfect around me, and I need you to cater to me because I don't want you to make me look bad. And then there's guys who work so hard and understand the game so much and have such a skill set that they start to make it easier on the guys around them, similar to what Cal does as a coach. You're so confident in your abilities that you say, listen, this is what you do well. So I'm going to change what I do to fix you just so we can be successful and we can all feel comfortable because I have that kind of ability. And that's who Jimmy Garoppolo was. And again, I think that's what you're seeing and why they were so successful down the stretch for the San Francisco 49ers.
When you look at him and Shanahan, I mean, is that a match made in heaven?
Yeah, it is, man. I have a philosophy about Shanahan's offense that, it makes bad quarterbacks look decent. Decent quarterbacks look good. Good quarterbacks look great. And great quarterbacks, he makes them the MVP. So, Jimmy and Cal is a perfect match.
I love that. Looking ahead to this offseason, get your take a little bit. You look at the roster right now. Cornerback, that alpha male wide receiver, especially in the red zone, that top tier edge rusher, and shoring up the offensive line, especially in the interior. When you look at those four positions, and granted, this is all hypothetical because you have no idea who's going to be there, whether it be in free agency or the draft. But let's say that the top of the position is available at all four spots, right? So you can go get your number one corner, your top receiver, your top edge, and that guard that's just a mauler. How would you rank those positions? Where would you prioritize those?
I would probably go edge rusher, corner, receiver, guard.
Interesting. So even as a wide receiver, no bias there. You'd put number three.
Yeah, and maybe even number four, to be honest. I think you can find, good guards, later. But I also think, like, and you hear it all the time, but very rarely do teams with a top wide receiver win the Super Bowl. That's just not what it, you know what I mean? It's just
Yep.
not, it's not what it takes. So I think you can make, I don't want to say make do, because I think you can find good receivers. Like, if the top guys are just not Super Bowl winners. It's just not how the league works. And I'm talking about over the last 15 years, you can look at the teams that have the big money wide receivers and they don't win Super Bowls. And I don't think that's a coincidence, because I think it's more of a chemistry thing and I think it's more of an offensive thing. And sometimes when you have that big time receiver that commands the ball so much, or you're trying to get him the ball in certain situations, I think it kind of hurts the chemistry of the offense, which also goes back to the Cleveland Browns in 2014 with Cal and why we were so successful for the first, what, 11 games of the season. We didn't have any big time receivers. There were articles written about how our receiving core was the worst in the league. And you fast forward to now, and it was the Taylor Gabriels, the Andrew Hawkins, the Travis Benjamin, the, even the Josh Gordons came back late. But it was a pretty good receiving core because it was good chemistry. So that's why I'm not so always gung-ho for a team to go try to get that $15, $16 million receiver a year, because I think it kind of hurts the overall product of the team.
That's great analysis. I mean, you can find guys undrafted, like you said, your Andrew Hawkins, your Adam Thielens. Look at him, an All-Pro candidate this
Exactly.
year.
Exactly.
So with that, is that would you say there's a can anyone thrive in Kyle Shanahan's system, or do you look at maybe, you know, if there's a receiver in this league that, man, this guy in particular would just kill it in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan, or is it Kyle Shanahan, you know, can make anybody ball? Not that those players, you know, don't have talent, right? Obviously, you, Taylor Gabriel, Travis Benjamin, all have tons of talent,
Right.
right? But is there a model or a makeup that really gets going with Kyle Shanahan, or can he make it happen with anybody?
You know, I don't know if there's like a specific model. And again, this goes back to the, you know, drafting a top wide receiver. I don't think it's a, you know, we need a top guy. I think it's you need certain pieces in Shanahan's offense, right? So he needs a speed guy. He needs a guy who is faster than everybody else on the field. That's a big part of his offense. He needs a tough guy. He needs a guy who's going to catch the ball over the middle, be tough as nails, and, you know, be a little versatile in the fact that he can play inside and outside. He needs a third down guy with great hands who is going to, under any circumstance, we can call on you and you can move the sticks for us, right? And, you know, he needs a screen guy. He needs a gadget guy, you know, and there's like these little kind of pockets of kind of wide receivers that he needs. So there's not anybody specific. There's a specific kind of wide receiver. There's a lot of guys who are speed guys I can plug into there. There's a lot of, you know, tough, gritty wide receivers, you know, who are super competitive that I can put in as X. And there's a lot of guys with great hands on a third down I can rely on. You know, it's just a matter of finding that right mix. Obviously, when in considering the salary cap and the situation, the contract situation, to put those guys in place.
Andrew, it's funny listening to you say this because as you're creating these check boxes, I'm checking them off with Marquise Goodwin, the fastest guy on the field, the guy who's tough, Pierre Garçon, the guy who's going to make a play on third down, Trent Taylor. You saw him emerge towards the end of the season. When you're seeing Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch put this team together, are you kind of sitting there like, "Yep, I get it. Yep, I see why he went for that guy. Yep, I see why he pinpointed him as a guy he wanted in this offense"?
No question. No question. I mean, it's a very specific formula that he uses in the offense, and you know, he needs it, and they need it as well. And I think that's when guys do best. And sometimes, you know, you try to put a square in a round hole, and it doesn't work. You know what I mean? And that's, I think, Cal does an incredible job of understanding that about his offense and about the personnel that he's looking for. And he's just running so much and so successful at so many different places, it's second nature to him. So he can look at a guy for a couple of plays and say, man, this guy would be perfect.
I
That guy would
love
be
it.
perfect.
I love it. Andrew, before I let you go, man, I've always been a fan of yours. Again, I think we talked about it before we hopped on here. What was it, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when you kicked your son out the house because he said AJ Green was his favorite receiver? A couple weeks later, you let him back in. How's the fam, man? I mean, he's got to be getting big now.
Nah, he's big, man. He's 6 years old now. Still loves AJ Green. Still loves Mohamed Sanu. So he follows him everywhere. Got their jerseys. He's probably wearing one of the jerseys right now as we speak. So some things never change.
I love it. I love it. Okay, where can our fans find you? Where can 49ers fans find you? What time on SportsCenter? And then tell us a little bit about the Tomahawk podcast. I know that just debuted last week.
Yeah, you can find me on their Facebook and Instagram at Hawk. Very simple. I got the trifecta. You know, I host Sports Center on Snapchat, so I'm there every week. You can find me on your Snapchat, all the episodes throughout the weekend, obviously covering the football side as well. You can find me on the Tomahawk podcast with Joe Thomas, number two on iTunes. So hopefully we can keep that momentum going. So tune in, subscribe, and rate it 5 stars to help us out. And yeah, man, besides that, just doing some stuff on the business side. I'm the director of business development for LeBron James and Maverick Carter's entertainment, media, and marketing companies. So keep myself busy in my retirement.
Lots of irons in the fire, as they say.
Yeah.
What giving you a little the elevator pitch about Tomahawk. I know Joe Thomas, one of the most entertaining dudes in the NFL, entertaining and most well-respected dudes in the
Yeah.
NFL for a long, long time. What do you guys jam about on that podcast?
Honestly, everything, man. I think me and Joe are kind of like the odd couple. We're two guys that if you didn't know anything about the Browns, you wouldn't realize, you know, how good of friends we are and how much time we spend together and all the conversations that we've had and just having those conversations in the locker room and getting his perspective, and it's such a mutual respect. We're like, man, we gotta make this entertainment. We gotta let other people in on this conversation. And that's kind of how the podcast was born. And, the first episode was super successful. And honestly, we got a lot of chemistry. And it just feels like, we're having the same locker room conversation we've been having for 3 years. And we're excited about letting people in on it.
That's incredible. Andrew, before I let you go, last question. Give me your take. I know you said you want to be an NFL GM someday. Do you feel like John Lynch, and I know there's been a couple of other foreign players that have taken on front office roles, obviously John Elway, the most prominent, but do you feel like the randomness of going from broadcasting into a front office like John Lynch paved the way for more players who you don't necessarily have to leave the league and jump right into a scouting role or a scouting assistant or a coaching assistant or whatever that may be? You can go your own path and still find your way back into the NFL.
Yeah, I think you could definitely find your way back and go your own path. Honestly, it's what I'm doing. So when I retired, I got, calls from three or four teams asking if I wanted to be in the front office, and I just felt it was important to spend some time away from football after being in the locker room and in that setting so long, all this for my family and to kind of explore some other things. But I don't think it's a thing where, you have to be going through that rat race and working your way up. Like whatever, if you have the ability, you have the ability. That's the cool thing about it, because there's guys who will spend 30 years in front offices, get their general manager position and be terrible, right? And there's guys like John Lynch who could be in the broadcast booth, come out and understand football at such a level that he's probably can be pretty successful relatively quickly. So as long as you put in the work, as long as you have the ground floor knowledge and experience, and you're not opposed to going somewhere and learning, I don't think there's anything you can't do, to be honest. And that's my philosophy. Now, I'm not saying, you should be pulling guys out of the broadcast booth to be your general manager, or just because someone's a former player, they'd be a great general manager. It's not that. I think every situation is unique, but the same goes for coaching. I see coaches every year get head coaching jobs that I think are terrible coaches. And over time, it proves itself true, right? And, there's some guys who are better defensive coordinators than they are head coaches, or better offensive coordinators than they are head coaches, or, better head coaches than they were coordinators. And, I don't think there's a specific formula to that. It's just a matter of getting people in those positions and figuring it out, because even the guys who have been through football for years and years and years will get to a certain position and still be terrible.
Good stuff, man. Andrew, I appreciate your time, dude. It's been a pleasure having you. I know our fans are going to eat this stuff up. Look forward to keeping in touch in the future, man. And take care, and Happy New Year to you.
Definitely. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.